Eric A. Weiss of the Sun Oil Company, the session chairman and organizer. I have in support a panel of all qualified experts on the subject. The method of procedure will be that I will make some introductory remarks to let the audience quiet down, and then we will go through a series of short discussions, the first one generally introducing the subject, the second one reporting in some detail on a workshop held in Purdue on this subject of process control, and then followed by a series of short remarks by panel members. At the end of all the short remarks, we'll entertain all kinds of questions and discussions and snide comments. What I would like to say at this point is to more or less describe the background of process control. We're talking about processes here, and I've chosen to term them industrial processes, by which I mean things run for profit rather than to kill people. So we're talking about processes such as you'd find in a petroleum refinery, a chemical plant, a cement plant, a glass plant, or an electrical generation plant. Now, in control, we're talking about both control in the short term, which generally relates to stability, as well as long-term control, which relates to making the process make money, reaching some steady state level of operation. The objectives of the control are economic, profit of some kind. The word language, here we're talking about any way of communicating with the computer. You'll find some other people will limit this kind of language to mean machine language, assembly language, Fortran, COBOL. The September 1966 issue of Control Engineering had a series of articles which essentially described the process control situation in the terms I've defined as it existed at that time. A book, if you'd rather have a hardcover, Computerized Process Control, by Cornish and Horton and others, published by Hobbs Dorman and Company, reviews the area up to about 1967. The several aspects of computer languages are treated in a series of articles in Control Engineering running from October 67 to December 1968. Of the languages that exist, eight of them are described in the December 1968 issue of the Transactions of the IEEE Group on Industrial Electronics and Control Instrumentation. The overall problem then is that there are a variety of these languages. They are all promoted as being just great. There is some inclination to believe that some standardization would be in order. As a matter of fact, this very question of what can be standardized is one of the subjects that the panel will discuss the several phases of. It is possible to standardize languages. I think we all agree on this. There are two Fortran standards, both issued by the United States Standards Institute. There are several groups that have taken some steps in the direction of standardization. The most significant is the workshop held at Purdue under Ted Williams' sponsorship in February of this year. The first panel member to make some remarks will be David M. Ostfeld, who is from the Fluor Corporation.
Basically, I was originally scheduled to give a brief history of what has happened. I'm slightly critical of the present approach. Essentially, the concept, in its broadest terms, is a language that is capable of making any user with little money, little skill, little involvement, able to take any vendor's computer and configure it to the configuration that he wants and install it within his plant. And anyone who's ever been involved in putting a real-time computer system into a process unit cannot argue with that concept. It's irrebuttable. However, the specifics of the agreement of the language characteristics and the problems involved with getting everyone to get together and the feasibility of the concept itself are certainly places that are amenable to argument and to strict examination before a project of this sort should be taken on. It's first illuminating to take a look at the history behind what has happened in real-time computer control starting in about 1958. Computers started to be installed into plants in order to get what people felt would be economic basis to their plants. And almost immediately, a proliferation of computers resulted because people did get the economic advantages that they were looking for. The earliest computers in the late 1950s essentially were all done in assembly language. Each system was a unique system, all its own, nine chances out of 10, the next system that came along, even if it was a system by the same user, by the same vendor, was different. And so every system was customized to the user. In the mid-1960s, it became fairly obvious to both the vendors and the users that the vendors were going to have to supply some sort of standardization that would allow the users not to use up those resources and that money that each system had cost them, and would alleviate some of the burden that the vendors had suffered because of the programming drains that had occurred to him to make these very large systems customized for his particular unit. Basically, today we stand with assembly language systems being approximately 2-to-1 to compiler level systems. So despite the fact that we have had this trend, it has still not greatly engulfed the process computer marketplace to the fact that we are all at compiler level languages. However, it is encouraging to know that the shift from customized individual systems to a standard software concept has been reflected in the slow evolution to the compiler language. The present pricing structure of the computer marketplace indicates that there is a break-even cost point presently indicated, whereby you have a typical reasonable system of 50 analog inputs and 20 analog outputs in a control data processing configuration is capable of supporting the additional hardware necessary to have a compiler level system rather than an assembler level system. Despite the fact that your hardware may run you $200,000, your software is so much cheaper now that you can afford the hardware and still hit the same price level. If one then takes into mind the present trend of the marketplace towards more computer power per dollar and less software per dollar, you can well see that the break-even point will soon be with the smallest of systems that you can afford the hardware necessary to interface a compiler-level system of some sort. And so I presently see the trend going towards accepting the vendor's compiler-level systems and the trend away from the assembler-level system. Examining the components of a real-time system, there are probably three. The first is your operational program, which essentially are your executive system and your interrupt structure. The second component are your support programs, those programs that drive your I/O scan system, any other subroutines that are necessary to support the system. And the third area are application programs, which are basically completely user-oriented. They include proprietary models of their processes, or proprietary optimization schemes, their ways of doing reports. Benefits, and this is the point that I focus on, benefits have been given for why we should have a real-time standard language. They said that, okay, one thing you'll do is you'll reduce programming costs, and two, you'll alleviate the confusion involved in evaluating the many claims of the individual vendor offerings. You'll have greater utilization of availability of the small amount of programming staffs that you have. You'll have ease of implementation by the users. You'll have an enhanced installation schedule. You'll have vendor independence. You'll have better management understanding. And finally, you'll have improved communications to vendors of the users' needs and desires. Very little, however, has been advanced concerning the other half of the picture, the reasons against having such a language. And these things, which I think that people basically have to some extent avoided, are things like inhibiting the competition and creativity among the vendors. Some vendors are not going to have an easy task of adapting to the language. And you've got the legal and ethical problems of the vendors interacting with one another to form the system and criticizing each other's systems. You've got the problem of implementation, the flexibility to control. If you set up your standard language one way today and your entire control philosophy changes in 3 or 4 years so that you no longer even do your same type of scanning, you no longer look at variables in the same way you did before, and you've thrown all this money down the drain for nothing. There's also the feasibility of inducing all users to accept the proposed standard, and this will be especially cogent if that minority dissension happens to be by users who do considerable amount of computer buying. You also have the actual application of the system, debugging at the compiler level. You've got a problem that if you have only people who are capable of programming at compiler level, how are you going to do systems debugging? Who's going to know the internal guts of your system to fight those little problems that occur? You have the substantial hardware interface difficulties and expenses incurred because of present-day equipment. In other words, is your present-day equipment capable of handling real-time, this one real-time language? Are we at a state-of-the-art capable of supporting the system? Then you have just the feasibility of the compiler-level interface to the users to suit all the users' needs. You have the proprietary nature of some of the users' software. They reflect right into the systems, and are people willing to reveal some of this stuff so that they can have a standardized system that they will all agree on? Finally, you have the implementation problem. Who's going to pay for all this language? And who's going to implement it? Who's going to be the first guinea pig? Will the vendors accept it? Can you force the vendors to accept it if you're a user? Coupled with these problems is the final question of whether or not, after we're all done and we've got this language, whether or not it will really accomplish that purpose which it set out to do, which is to make the users independent of the vendors. I question very seriously if most users will allow systems to be installed at considerable expenses to themselves without a knowledge of how the particular vendor's hardware accomplishes its purposes and its functions, and without adequate personnel to maintain these installations. There's also the problem of you have to understand the guts of the system anyhow to economically evaluate what vendors you want for what specific tasks you have. These problems associated with this ambitious undertaking of formulating a standard control language are necessary topics of discussion and must be resolved before launching into the implementation of the language. Perhaps a near-term solution is no more than facing the question of standard languages versus standard software. This would imply the present exigencies of reality upon the drive for a standard language necessitate further guideline studies and formulations to the vendors by the users, including such things as what they feel an efficient single machine operation implies, the specifications of the characteristics of a real-time Fortran system, generalized optimization systems with greater emphasis on dynamic programming and hierarchical control, flexibility in fill-in-the-blank systems, what you really need for first-line data configurations and for online process modification, improved specifications on data display systems, standard management and file information systems, standard maintenance handling systems, and the demands for capable control techniques so that computer installations that are supposedly control installations really do bring about benefits because of enhanced control strategy. I feel that as vendors progress to meet these guidelines, coupled with further hardware development that allows more independent operation of each individual part of your machine, then you can again approach the problem of a standardized language for real-time control and can effectively approach a real feasible solution for the problem.
You should by now have grasped the idea that the panel is not unanimous. This discussion of standard languages, the pros and cons, and how to go about it has been going on for some time. And Dr. Ted Williams of Purdue arranged a workshop to be held at Purdue last February.
I'd like to talk about what went on at the Purdue Conference on Standardizing Industrial Control Languages. I'd also like to cover what didn't go on there, so we don't go away with any misrepresentations of what was actually accomplished, and also to discuss what's going to happen in the future. The IEEE, in June of 1968, had a conference at Ann Arbor where the vendors and the users got together and described the languages, and also had a similar panel discussion on some of the features of the language, and there was an apparent lack of communication at that time. I think that's an understatement. In 1968, the ISA show, New York City, October 68, there was also another conference held on programming languages, and a commitment was made by Dr. Williams to hold the standardization conference at Purdue in February. At the Fall Joint Computer Conference in November in San Francisco, Eric Weiss hosted another panel discussion on the same subject. And again, I think we were beginning to communicate and realize that some of us called languages everything, some of us called languages Fortran, and so others called it a fill-in-the-blanks, and we were beginning finally to get the point across. And it resolved itself pretty much at Purdue, where we spent a week together, day and night, talking about what it was that we meant and what it was that we were trying to standardize. There were 11 manufacturers represented, 11 systems houses, 31 users, 2 universities, and 2 publications. That's 57 organizations together for 1 week. There were 91 people present for the duration of the conference. The breakdown pretty much on the users, just to make you feel that you were represented, were there are 2 corporations representing the electric power industry, 7 from the metals, steel and aluminum, 15 chemical and petroleum, 2 from the glass industry, 3 from paper, and 2 automotive manufacturers. Each company, no matter what they did, how small or how big they were, got 1 vote. The organization of the conference was handled by an executive committee. It was made up, the members of the executive committee also chaired the committees. These were the procedural language committee, headed by Mr. Herb Pike from General Electric. The fill-in-the-blanks committee, which was a name we tried to associate for those languages that are like Prospero, was headed by Don Union of IBM. A data collection, computerized system checkout, and sequencing control functions committee that was handled by John Cugini of Davis Computer Systems. And a man-machines communications committee handled by Ed Aldridge of Union Carbide. And one of the very first things we tried to do at the Purdue conference was to see if we could agree on something. And what we did approve as a statement of goals. First of all, there should be a language with the functions that allow communication with a system, construction of new programs that can initiate and modify the sampling sequences and the data manipulation techniques used within the computer. It just says there should be a higher level programming language. That resolves the question, you know, should there not be one or should there one? That's decided. And the functions can be accomplished by a standard high-level programming languages and specialized process control programs, and communication would be handled through the operators console. Now, this is what was agreed upon as a statement of goals. And part of those goals were for a machine and configuration independence and to set up a standard for the language, a standard perhaps with subsets that might also be called standards, so that they could have upward compatibility. And one of the other features that was felt important in the statement of the goals was that this language was got to provide for automatic or semi-automatic documentation of the program itself. Okay, that was the statement of the goals. Now, there's a statement also that was agreed upon called the Basic Principles of Agreement. A high-level programming language should be available, and this high-level language is going to satisfy the requirements specified by a committee. It's not yet defined what the functional requirements of this language are to be. But it's going to probably minimize the user's need to know about, number one, the insides of the industrial computer and the insides of the vendor-supplied software. The language would allow for modular construction of the systems. We also agreed to temporarily use as a glossary the Automation Data Processing Glossary from the Bureau of Standards, 1962. If that doesn't work, then we're going to use Foxborough's Glossary on Process Control. If that doesn't define the term, we're going to go to GE's Glossary on Process Control. And then we're going to finally replace all those glossaries with one of our own. I'd like now to cover what recommendations were made by the several committees. The first committee that I'd like to talk about is the Committee on the Procedural Programming Languages. And first of all, what we meant by procedural programming languages were the Fortran or the Fortran-like languages. Herb Pike was chairman of this committee. The results of this committee's effort were to come up with a short-range set of objectives. A committee is now working on that. It's called the Interim Procedural Languages Committee. Its function is to increase the commonality in the existing Fortran-based languages. We found an awful lot of commonality among the existing Fortrans in the areas of program scheduling, of input-output, of using time delays, and it is an area where we can make some immediate objectives and probably some immediate goals without a very large cost to the vendor or to the user of the system. Also, there is a long-range procedural programming committee working on specifying the functional requirements of a process control language. They are going to seek a trial implementation of this language and to define some way to certify that this language really conforms to the specifications. There's a short-range effort aimed at increasing the commonality in the Fortrans, and there's a long-range effort to really nail down and specify a programming language. The second committee report that I'd like to cover is the format defined language, which used to be called the fill in the blanks committee. And this is something on the order of Prospero, or Music, or Biceps, those kind of languages. Their report simply recommended that these languages be used in the areas of data acquisition, alarming, logging, regulatory DDC, and by that they meant set point control and DDC. And further, that there be a name of some kind assigned to this thing. It's the format-defined language really doesn't convey the information about this kind of a language. A generic name needs to be generated for it. That additional work needs to be done on specifying the requirements and the features of this language, and that this committee in the future try to iron out new directions for development in the areas of this fill-in-the-blanks language. Okay, the third committee that I would like to describe is the Committee on Data Collection and Sequencing Control Functions. This was headed by John Cugini of Davis Computer Systems. Here in the minutes of this conference is a beautiful specification for data collection systems. It is almost a complete work in itself, and it covers the area of system error checking, data collection of analog inputs, and requirements for a sequencing language. And they're pretty definitive in itself. It's a beautiful piece of work. In the data collection area, they've gone in and described conversion techniques, timing, scanning, filtering, limit checking, and covered all of the things that we kind of use glibly. I'd recommend looking at that committee's report if you are in any way involved in using a data collection system or involved in implementing a new one. The fourth committee that I'd like to report on is the Man-Machine Communications Committee. Here again is a fairly comprehensive study of the problem and a very good documentary of guidelines to be used in man-machine communications. It pretty much stands by itself also as a rather complete work. There were four committees that are established and are going on toward goals that we had spelled out near the end of the conference. From the organization standpoint, Dr. T.J. Williams is the chairman of a set of workshops for a period of 1 year. He has subcommittees, five of them, a long-range procedural language committee that Herb Pike is going to head up, an interim procedural language that Mr. Gene Kelly of Kaiser Aluminum is heading up. There's a problem-oriented languages committee, which includes the data acquisition and the sequencing languages. And Mr. Tom Gaspar of Merck & Company is in charge of that. The glossary is going to be handled by Mr. Ed Aldridge of Union Carbide. And the Functional Requirements Committee, let me elaborate a little bit on this committee. They are the ones that are going to specify what the requirements of these languages are going to be. And John Cugini of Davis Computer Systems is going to head that committee. Now, if you want to influence what these committees are going to do, I would suggest that you write those chairmen that I just mentioned and somehow either write down what you think they should be or muscle your way into being on that committee. The next meeting of the workshop is going to be held September 29th through October 3rd, 1969 at Purdue. The meeting has been set up in September to review these committees' work and Last, I'd like to say that the minutes of the meeting at Purdue contain an awful lot of valuable information, surveys of customer requirements, surveys of what is available, and right now I believe these are available through Dr. T.J. Williams.
Another member of the panel also attended the Purdue workshop, and it's his turn now to either comment or elaborate or make remarks which are completely independent of the workshop. This is Professor James D. Scheffler of the Case Western Reserve University. Jim?
Thank you, Eric. I think Bob summarized the Purdue workshop very well, and I'd rather take my 5 minutes here to give some of my views on the subject at hand, that is, the standardization of the languages for continuous process control. It certainly is true, as Eric mentioned in his initial summary, that over the last couple of years, there's been a proliferation of languages introduced by many, many vendors for many, many purposes. So many have been introduced that the question of standardization is very pertinent. But the object of standardization ought to be the reduction of cost, and it's pertinent then for us here today to discuss why so many languages have come into being and to what extent we could cut the cost of a process control installation by standardizing these languages. I think if there's one thing that we've learned in the last 10 years of installations of process control systems, whether they were $100,000 jobs or $3 million jobs, is that you cannot take a very, very large, complex control problem, as almost all of these things are, and do it in one fell swoop with one guy working part-time 5 days a week. That is, the problems are very large, and they have to be managed very, very carefully in order for the thing to work out economically. And those that weren't so well managed failed. We have finally learned how to apply systems engineering to the design of complex control systems so that we can break up our problem into a number of independent tasks, but take into account the interaction between these tasks. Typically, these tasks involve data acquisition, direct control, advanced control like feed-forward control or non-interacting control, supervisory control, optimizing control, management information, etc. The separation of the tasks this way has proved very, very beneficial because each one of them, instead of being a very large complex problem, becomes fairly well defined so that we have some hope of implementing it economically. If you examine, though, these tasks that you have to implement to solve the overall control problem, it becomes self-evident why all of these languages have been introduced. That is, the technology involved in implementing data acquisition or direct control is really quite a bit different from implementing optimizing control or supervisory control. The techniques are different, the languages are different, the words are different, and the way you implement this in software is essentially different. This is why it is appropriate to have a direct digital control language if you're doing direct digital control, and it's not appropriate to use that language if you're attempting to build a management information system. So I believe these languages were a tremendous step forward in the reduction of cost of process control implementation, and that they will be with us for a long time, and that we shouldn't even consider eliminating all these languages for any one all-inclusive language. Then we might ask then why the problem with process control. And the answer is, if you attempt to put together a complex process control system involving all of these subparts, that what has been lacking is not the systems engineering approach to the control system, but the systems engineering approach to the implementation in software. That is, we should not think of a language implementing our process control. Rather, we should think of a system of software. The parts of the system are just as clearly defined as the parts of the control system. There, of course, is a basic executive in the system has been mentioned. There is normally a separate and distinct data acquisition program, a separate and distinct direct digital control program. There is usually a compiler-level language like Fortran implemented under the executive. There are usually utility systems, file management systems, or what have you. Each of these in its own right is an excellent solution to the problem that it was designed for, direct digital control programs for direct digital control and so on. The problem, however, comes about in the interaction of these packages or languages in attempting to implement the overall control system. The problem of communication between these packages and compatibility of these packages hasn't received the attention that it has deserved. Now, as far as standardization is concerned, there are really two directions we can go in. The one is to take each of these well-defined tasks, like direct digital control or data acquisition, and by means of committees, such as we did at Purdue, to try and define these very well and produce standard common definitions of the tasks and produce standard languages for direct digital control, data acquisition, management information, or what have you. Okay. This is probably a feasible direction in which to go. The real question is whether there's any economic benefit from doing so. The cost of a process control system, I don't think, would be decreased significantly if everybody's direct digital control program used the identical names and terms. I believe that the problem and the cost of process control software today is due to the lack of compatibility between these languages, or among these languages, rather than the particular form that the individual languages take. There are many, many examples in the literature which can document this. For example, the problem of executive systems produced by vendors before the days of direct digital control, and then the problem of adding a direct digital control package and making it compatible with the executive. There are instances where this has delayed the installation of a computer control system for as long as 2 years in making these compatible when they were not designed to be so. And in addition, most of the executive systems were not designed with a file structure in mind, so that when we attempt to interface with a management information system, as we often do today, again, this incompatibility means we are going inside system software, changing it, with the attendant increase in costs of implementation. The biggest problem of all, of course, is something like operator communication, which is peculiar almost to every single application. It is almost impossible to standardize on the operator communication part of the software of a process control system, with the result that the system software is developed without real attention paid to this part, and it's added as an afterthought later with the appropriate costs and delays of in the implementation of the system. In general, I think another area where this has caused us great trouble and where standardization would not greatly decrease the cost is on the effective limitations of the executives as we have them today for process control computers. These are designed for the general case of a fairly large standalone computer system of a given size. And if you attempt to use these in an application that is either very much larger or very much smaller or very much different, then most of the costs of the implementation can be traced to tailoring the executive to this particular application. Now, this whole business is getting better today because the vendors, because of their experiences, are putting out today what is actually pretty good software. The problem in the future, though, is rather frightening, I think. We are going away from what is now almost a standard package from the vendors, that is the single standalone computer system with standard and conventional input and output and instruments. We're going in the direction of very new instrumentation based on large-scale integration, where we have remote multiplexing and perhaps digital-to-analog converters out there with the instruments, where we might have small computers arranged in a hierarchical structure interfacing with a larger computer rather than one single computer with the entire control system in it, where graphic communication might be the rule rather than the exception, and the graphic communication completely dedicated to the particular application. If it's a paper mill, using all paper mill terminology and schematics, etc., so that nothing can be standardized. If we now attempt to standardize on these packages and executive systems, then we are going to be in the position that we can't even agree on the hardware configuration, let alone the solution to the control problem. So I think as these prices due to large-scale integration come in and affect our hardware over the next 5 years, that we're going to see significant increases in the complexity and cost of the software for implementation. Well, what possible role then can standardization play in the solution to this problem? I believe the solution to this problem lies in the use of a higher-level language, but not a higher-level language like Fortran, but rather a higher-level language of a different type, which is used for the implementation of all of the software in the system. Not only the application programs, but the DDC programs itself, the data acquisition programs, the executive itself, the operator communication packages. There are significant precedents for this solution. All government command and control systems, which in general are much larger than typical process control systems, are done in a higher level language almost completely. And this is in the language Jovial, or the new version space communication language. In addition, there have been a number of very successful process control applications in the industrial area reported in the literature where everything from the executive on up has been written in a higher level language. Fortran, unfortunately, is not this higher level language. It does not have the power or the capability of describing well the kinds of statements you need to program a direct digital control program or an operator communication program. But nonetheless, there have been a number of languages proposed which have this capability. They've been proposed in England. There is a standard language in use in Norway for this, with the same objective and purpose in mind. There have been a number proposed in the United States. We've even proposed one ourselves at CASE. The point is not that these languages don't exist, but that none has been thoroughly exercised with the advantages or disadvantages really demonstrated as yet. I've really made only 2 points here, and let me summarize them before I conclude. One is that a control system is made up of many, many different tasks, and these require many, many different languages or packages for their implementation. This does not mean that control software cannot be implemented economically, I believe. The varied hardware configuration and operator communication problems dictate the need for a higher level language for the production of the overall software system, which is the direction I think that the software industry is going to go in, is going in anyway. I think the IEEE could play a significant role in this area. And it's not by standardizing on any language that's in existence today, because none has really been proved well enough or even used enough so that adequate experience is available. But what is needed is a forum where papers in this general area can appear and people can exchange ideas. I mean papers on the communication and compatibility between the application programs and the hardware configurations. I mean an area where we can produce publish papers that discuss difficult implementation problems, the reasons they're difficult, and the software problem, together with an economic evaluation of what it costs in order to do the software evaluation. And finally, the merits of various real-time languages which are being proposed all over the place toward the solution of these problems, so that when the question of standardization really does arise, we can put a dollar value in some of these efforts and perhaps get a better measure of where we'll be in 10 years when the industry is responding to the changing hardware and software that we have today.
The next panel member who will speak is Bert C. Roberts, Manager of Software Development at the Hagen Computer Systems Division of Westinghouse Electric Corporation. Bert?
First, I thought it might be of interest to indicate something which I don't believe has really been brought out, but the process control industry, so far as using computers, is relatively young in comparison to the rest of the computer world, and it's particularly evident when you look at how much we've standardized across the industry. There are what I consider a couple of good reasons for this. Number one, there is no IBM of this process control world. There's no one that's controlling 75% of the market and thus forcing a way to go. Secondly, by the very nature of the data processing type computer world, the computer manufacturers were marketing users' systems. In general, what the process control computer vendors have been marketing to date are entire systems, where we will go in and install an entire power plant and get it running, as opposed to marketing something the user can use. The industry has been making steps toward standardization very recently, however, but it's important to point out that until very recently, these steps were not unified and they were very vendor-oriented. In other words, each vendor has tried to standardize within his own organization, as opposed to trying to make standard approaches across the industry. And there was only one reason that I can put my finger on for this. It was to save costs and make more money. It seems to me the process control industry is now at the point where they're at some crossroads as to where do we go from here. You've heard from the other panel members today some very specific efforts that are going on. You can divide these up into what I would call some particular organizations attempting to organize vendors and users and establish some industry standards. Examples of these organizations would be IEEE and ISA at various meetings like this. There are also some commercial efforts going on where some systems houses, such as IIT and SRI, are attempting to define a standard process control language. I can't seem to find enough information about these standard languages to really comment on what I think of them. But I can comment on the Purdue workshop, which was held very recently. It certainly seems to be a step in the right direction, and the volume of information that the people from Westinghouse that they came back with was quite extensive, so it certainly is an effort. Also, vendors and users are trying to standardize across the industry, at least to the point of forcing what they already have onto the rest of the industry. I think there's a word of caution here in my mind. There must be some unified relationship between all these efforts going on, or else the whole effort is going to end up in coming out with several standards or several separate inventions of several different kinds of wheels. We must be careful of how to approach this problem such that if we are going to come up with a standard, we come up with one standard. The next point, which I think is very critical and has been touched on in a sense, if there is going to be a standard across the industry, it's got to have vendor acceptance. I don't believe the user without the vendor can truly come up with the standard. It's going to take an acceptance of each of the vendors to come up with the standard. The users independently have already made the first step, and that is in touching upon Fortran. Whether Fortran is the ultimate language or not, it doesn't matter. But the fact is that they have all got to that point, and that is a common thread to start on. But I think that it is very important that we point out now cost was mentioned before, and that cost was mentioned specifically from the user's point of view. I'm certain that every user can justify cheaper cost if he had a standard language to work with. Cost must be considered from the vendor's point of view. The point I'm getting at here, that a standard can come about, but it can't come about overnight. It's going to have to be a gradual economic step for the vendors to take. So it is going to be long term. We can't throw away everything we have produced to date. That sort of points to starting with the common thread that we all have, namely Fortran, and perhaps expanding from there. I think the next step, which is very important, there must be a convergence of the activities. If we go along four or five parallel standardization steps, there will not be a standard.
Thank you, Bert. The next panel member to give his remarks is David Frost, manager of General Software Development, the Process Computer Department of General Electric Company. Dave.
We're talking about all the things that we're working for. Sometimes it's a little more interesting to sit back and say what kinds of things are likely to happen irregardless of what we're working for, perhaps. And in order to discuss that, I think we have to discuss from two points of view. One is, what are we really searching for? And what it is in the way of languages that people want. In order to look in the future, sometimes you have to look in the past at various languages and see how they succeeded or failed. And some have succeeded and some have failed. And we really should decide what it is about those languages that that made them a big success or made them disappear forever. What is the one big attribute of a language that has made it successful? To my mind, the one attribute that really counts is that the language must coincide with the application. Now, when I use the word coincide, I mean it must not be too narrow or it must not be too broad. For instance, assembly language programming, without a doubt, is a very broad language. So although it covers your application, it's probably too broad, and for that reason is not the answer. I'll tell you some languages that have succeeded, truly succeeded. Two of them come immediately to mind, Fortran and COBOL. They are used, and they're used a great deal, and they are not being used because anybody just forced it down people's throats. There was some pressure for COBOL by the Department of Defense, but that doesn't mean that all the commercial users that don't have to do with the government are using it because of them. It was successful because it coincided with the application. Now, there are others that have, incidentally, ALGOL is a success in Europe. It's a failure in the United States, though. And there is for a different reason. It isn't that ALGOL didn't coincide with the application, it was just too late. Fortran, by that time, was a success in the United States, and unless something is a lot better, it'll never supplant something that's good enough. What are some of the failures that we've had in the past? Well, at least to this stage, PL1 is a failure by my definition. It isn't being used a great deal. I think also it's too broad. You can do anything in PL1, virtually. You can do all these things, but it doesn't coincide with the application, which means the programmers have to learn more than they really want to learn to do the job that they have to do right then. It isn't efficient. Another failure is Fortran in process control. I call that a failure because it isn't overwhelmingly in use. Look at Fortran in scientific programming. Its use is overwhelming. You just would hardly think about going back to assembly language programming like it was 12, 14 years ago. And there's no need to. Fortran really does the job for you. But in process control, here's the application, and here's Fortran. Real-time programming is different than scientific programming. The things, the facilities that you need for real-time responses, control of process I/O are not in Fortran. We're all trying very hard to put things in to make it more nearly coincide. We're succeeding partially, but to this point, you can't say that Fortran is really a success. What is the programming job? Anytime you have a job to program, let's say it's a control of a continuous process of some kind. First thing you have to do is you have to analyze the job. It doesn't matter what language you're going to use. It doesn't even matter if you're a programmer at that stage. Somebody has to know what that plant does and what it is you want to do as you control it. And that job is the analysis job. You're going to have to design the system, the computer system and the programs that go in it. You're going to have to implement it. And here is where our tunnel vision puts all our emphasis. We look and say, aha, I'm going to program this. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to code. I'm going to code in a language, and a specific language is going to solve my problem. And sure enough, this is where the language makes the most difference, is in the implementation. You have to code the thing, you have to debug it. You have to install it, which means you get those loops on control. You don't just program them, you get them on control. You tear your hair out making sure that all the instrumentation works, that all the programs work, that sure enough the process worked the way you thought it worked. There's all kinds of problems. And then there is the maintenance problem. A program is a long living thing. So many people say, I'm through. They just installed it. That program existed from the first time it was a gleam in someone's eye up until it really becomes obsolete, that process is no longer controlled by that program.